The silver burned going down, thick and chalky like swallowing liquid pennies, and Sable pressed her fist against her mouth to keep from gagging on the floor of the herbalist's back room, where dried foxglove hung from the ceiling in bundles that looked like the hands of dead women. She had crushed the colloidal silver into the tea herself. 3 vials, enough to poison a wolf's bloodstream for weeks, maybe permanently. The herbalist, old Maren, had watched her do it with milky eyes and said nothing, just pushed a jar of raw honey across the counter and muttered, "For the taste, girl, you'll need it." Sable didn't use the honey. She wanted to taste every drop. She wanted to remember what it cost to kill a bond she never asked for. The forced mate mark on her neck, just below her left ear, throbbed like a second heartbeat. It had been placed there 6 months ago by the alpha of the Greymoor pack, a man named Aldrich, who smelled like wet dog and gin, and who had bitten her during a territory negotiation because her former pack leader had offered her up like a bottle of wine at a dinner party. A gift. A sweetener for a land deal. She'd been unconscious when it happened, drugged with valerian root stirred into porridge she'd eaten in the pack kitchen where she worked as the night cook. She hadn't even been awake for it. Now the bond sat in her blood, like a fish hook, tugging her toward a man who made her skin crawl, whose voice through the mate link sounded like radio static and smelled, even from the inside of her own mind, like something left too long in standing water. The silver would kill the bond. It would also, possibly, kill her. Sable swallowed the last of it and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Her fingers were shaking. She could feel the metal settling into her stomach like cold sand, and within 30 seconds the mark on her neck began to burn. Not the dull throb she was used to, but a searing, iron-on-skin kind of heat that made her bite through her bottom lip. Good, she thought. Let it burn. She had been the night cook at the Greymoor packhouse for 2 years. Before that, she had been the night cook at her birth pack's lodge in the Voss territory, 400 miles north, where she had spent every evening, from 6 in the evening to 3 in the morning, preparing meals for wolves who never once thanked her, in a kitchen with a gas burner that leaked and a window that didn't close all the way, so that in January, the water in the pasta pot had a skin of ice on it before she lit the stove. She was good at it. She could make venison stew from scraps and bone broth that tasted like something you'd pay money for. She could bake bread that made the whole pack house smell like a grandmother's kitchen, and she did this every night, alone, in the dark hours while everyone else slept, because she was an omega with no wolf. No wolf. Not a weak wolf or a dormant wolf. Nothing. The space inside her where the animal was supposed to live was just empty, like a room with the furniture removed. She'd been tested at 12, the way all pups were, brought out under the full moon with the other children and told to shift. The others had screamed and cried and then exploded into small, clumsy wolves with 2 big paws. Sable had stood there in the clearing and felt absolutely nothing, and the pack healer had looked at her with an expression she would later recognize as pity mixed with something worse, which was relief that she wasn't his daughter. She left the herbalist's shop through the back door into an alley that smelled like rotting cabbage and motor oil. The town of Harrowfield sat on the border between 3 pack territories. A neutral zone where wolves came to trade and drink and pretend they were civilized. It was raining, the kind of thin, spiteful rain that didn't have the decency to be a proper storm, just a constant misting that worked its way through her canvas jacket and into her bones. She had 40 minutes before Aldrich would feel the bond weaken. Maybe less. She had to be gone by then. Her plan, if you could call it that, was to walk to the bus station 6 blocks east, buy a ticket to anywhere the highway went, and disappear into the human world where pack politics couldn't follow. She had $412 in a Ziploc bag, safety pinned to the inside of her waistband, her tips from cooking, saved over months in a coffee can, she kept hidden inside the industrial dishwasher that nobody else ever cleaned. She had no phone, no identification that wasn't pack-issued, no family left alive who would notice she was gone. The rain got heavier. She hunched her shoulders and walked faster, her boots squelching on the wet pavement. The silver was doing something inside her now. She could feel it spreading from her stomach outward, a metallic chill that was different from the cold of the rain, more internal, like her blood itself was cooling. The mark on her neck had stopped burning and started itching, a deep subdermal itch that she couldn't scratch, as if something under her skin was trying to crawl out. She turned a corner and the bus station came into view, a flat-roofed building with flickering fluorescent lights and a bench out front, where a human man in a yellow rain slicker was eating a sandwich. Normal. Ordinary. The kind of scene that had nothing to do with wolves or bonds or silver poisoning. She was halfway across the parking lot when the world tilted. Not metaphorically. The actual ground seemed to shift under her feet, and she staggered sideways and caught herself on the hood of a parked truck. Her vision went grey at the edges. The silver. It was working faster than Maren had warned. She could taste metal in the back of her throat, on her tongue, behind her teeth. When she swallowed, it was like swallowing a mouthful of old coins. She pushed off the truck and kept walking. 20 more feet to the door. 15, 10. The scent hit her like a wall. Cedar smoke. Black tea. Something underneath both of those. Something she had no name for. Like the smell of deep snow on a mountain. The cold, clean nothing. Smell of altitude. It flooded her sinuses and made her eyes water, and somewhere deep in the hollow place where her wolf was supposed to be, something stirred. Not a wolf, not exactly, but something. She stopped walking. A black SUV was parked at the far end of the lot. Engine running. Wipers on. Through the rain-streaked windshield, she couldn't make out details, just shapes, figures. The suggestion of someone very large in the driver's seat, and 2 more in the back. The SUV had no plates. The windows were tinted past legal limits. The driver's door opened. He was taller than any wolf she'd ever seen, and she'd spent her life surrounded by them. 6'5", maybe 6'6", with shoulders that filled the doorframe of the vehicle as he stepped out. Dark hair cut short, military short, with a scar that ran from his left temple down to his jaw, like someone had tried to open his face with a knife and very nearly succeeded. He wore black, all black. A coat that reached his knees, boots that looked like they'd walked through wars, which, she would later learn, they had. But it was his eyes that stopped her, golden. Not brown gold or hazel gold. Gold. Like melted amber. Like the color at the center of a candle flame. They locked onto her across 40 feet of wet parking lot, and the rain between them seemed to evaporate. He scented the air. She saw his nostrils flare. Saw his chest expand. Saw his entire body go rigid, the way a predator goes rigid when it catches something on the wind. Then he said 1 word, not loudly but with a resonance that carried through the rain like a bass note through water. Mate, Sable ran. It was stupid. And she knew it was stupid, even as she did it, because you don't run from an alpha, and you especially don't run from an alpha who has just scented his mate. Because every instinct in a wolf's biology reads running as prey behavior, and prey behavior triggers the chase. But she wasn't thinking about wolf biology. She was thinking about the last alpha who had claimed her, the unconscious bite, the months of servitude disguised as partnership, the way Aldrich's hand felt on the back of her neck, like a collar, like ownership, like a lock. She made it 6 steps before her legs gave out, the silver. It had reached her extremities. Her calves seized, her knees buckled, and she went down hard on the wet asphalt, catching herself on her palms and feeling the skin shred. The rain hit the back of her neck. Blood from her torn palms mixed with the puddle beneath her. She heard footsteps, fast, heavy. The kind of footsteps that belonged to someone who covered ground like it owed him something. Then hands on her shoulders, large enough that his fingers wrapped from her clavicle nearly to her spine, and he was turning her over with a gentleness that was completely at odds with his size. She looked up into those gold eyes from 6 inches away, and the scent of him, cedar and black tea and mountain snow, was so overwhelming that for one disoriented second she forgot about the silver, forgot about Aldrich, forgot about everything except the insane, irrational warmth spreading through her chest like she'd swallowed sunlight instead of poison. "Don't," she said. Her voice came out hoarse. "Don't touch me. Don't you dare mark me." Something shifted in his expression. She expected anger. Every alpha she'd ever known responded to defiance with anger. But what crossed his face was something else. Something that looked almost like recognition. As if he'd been expecting exactly this response from exactly this woman. "You're bleeding," he said. His voice was deep but quiet. Not the commanding bark she'd braced for. The voice of a man who didn't need to be loud because he'd never once been ignored. "And you're an alpha who just said, 'Mate to a stranger in a parking lot. We both have problems.'" For a fraction of a second, something happened to his mouth. The ghost of a smile, there and gone, suppressed like a reflex. "I'm going to pick you up," he said. "Not a question, not a request." "Like hell you are. You're bleeding on the concrete. Your pupils are different sizes, and you taste like silver." He leaned closer, and she realized he was scenting her, his nose almost touching her jaw, breathing her in, and even through the rain and the blood and the panic, she could feel the bond, not Aldrich's bond, something else entirely. Something that felt less like a fishhook and more like a key turning in a lock she hadn't known was there. "Who forced a mark on you?" She didn't answer. She couldn't. The silver was in her chest now, constricting, and her vision was going grey again. And the last thing she registered before consciousness slipped was his arms under her knees and behind her shoulders, lifting her like she was made of paper, and his heart beat against her cheek, steady and slow, completely unperturbed, as if carrying a bleeding, silver-poisoned omega out of a parking lot in the rain, was simply what this particular Tuesday had required of him. She woke up warm, and that was wrong. She was never warm. 2 years of sleeping in the kitchen storeroom at Greymoor, on a cot with a blanket that smelled like cooking grease and mouse droppings, had trained her body to expect cold. But this was warm in a way that went deep, layered warmth, soft sheets with a thread count she could feel against her bare forearms, a duvet that smelled like lavender detergent, and underneath all of it, in the pillow, in the mattress, in the very air of the room, the scent of cedar smoke and black tea. His scent. She was in his bed. She sat up so fast the room spun. A bedroom. Large. Exposed timber walls, a stone fireplace with embers still glowing, floor-to-ceiling windows showing a mountain landscape blurred by rain. A chair beside the bed, where someone had been sitting recently, the leather cushion still compressed by the weight of a body much larger than hers. On the bedside table, a glass of water, a bottle of activated charcoal capsules, and a note written in precise, angular handwriting on a piece of torn paper. The charcoal will bind the silver. Take 4. Do not leave this room until I return. The door is not locked. She read the last sentence twice. The door is not locked. Why would he write that unless he knew, specifically, that she would expect it to be locked? Unless he understood that every room she'd been put in for the last 6 months had been locked from the outside. She took the charcoal. Not because he told her to. Because she didn't actually want to die. She just wanted the bond dead, and the silver had done more damage than she'd intended. She could feel it in her gums, a metallic ache, and when she ran her tongue along her teeth, it tasted like she'd been chewing on aluminum foil. She also got out of the bed and went immediately to the door and opened it. A hallway. Hardwood floors. The sound of voices downstairs. Multiple. Male. The rumble of a conversation she couldn't quite make out. The smell of coffee and something cooking. Bacon. Real bacon. Not the freezer-burned turkey substitute she'd been feeding the Greymoor wolves for the last year. "You must be the mate," she startled. A man was leaning against the wall opposite the door, arms crossed, watching her with an expression of mild amusement. He was smaller than the Alpha from the parking lot, leaner, with reddish-brown hair and a scatter of freckles across his nose that made him look younger than he probably was. Beta energy. She could feel it even without a wolf. "I'm not anyone's mate," Sable said. "Right." He uncrossed his arms. "I'm Declan, his beta. Well, one of them. He's downstairs pretending to review Border Patrol reports, but actually waiting for you to come down so he can feed you. That man becomes unbearable when someone he's responsible for hasn't eaten." "He's not responsible for me. You could go tell him that. He's in the kitchen." Declan tilted his head. "Fair warning, though. He's been cooking for the last 2 hours. He does that when he's processing something. The last time he cooked like this was when his mother died, and we ate roast lamb for 3 days straight." She stood in the hallway and weighed her options. She could try to leave. The door wasn't locked. The beta wasn't blocking her path. But she was in a building she didn't recognize, on a mountain she couldn't place, with no money because the Ziploc bag was gone, probably removed when they changed her into. She looked down, an oversized flannel shirt that was not hers, and a pair of wool socks that went up to her knees. She went downstairs. The kitchen was enormous and open to a great room with vaulted ceilings and windows on 3 sides. All of them showing the same rain-soaked mountain landscape. A massive timber table ran the length of the room, and at the far end of the kitchen, standing at a commercial-grade range with 6 burners going simultaneously, was the Alpha from the parking lot. He had taken off the black coat. Underneath he wore a grey Henley pushed up to his elbows, revealing forearms that were mapped with scars. Not decorative scars, not the clean lines of ritual marking, but the rough, puckered tissue of combat wounds, claw marks, teeth marks, the topography of someone who had been hurt many times and had kept fighting every time. He was stirring something in a cast-iron skillet with a wooden spoon, and the kitchen smelled like garlic and butter and rosemary, real rosemary, the fresh herb, not the dusty, dried version she'd been using for years. He looked up when she entered, and his eyes did that thing again. That gold flame focus that made her feel like the only solid thing in a room full of smoke. "Sit down," he said. "Who are you? Sit down and I'll tell you." She sat. Not because he told her to, but because her legs were still unreliable, and the chair was right there. He moved a plate in front of her. Scrambled eggs with chives, thick-cut bacon, sourdough toast with butter that was still melting into the bread, a small bowl of mixed berries with a dusting of powdered sugar. The presentation was deliberate, careful, the way she would have plated food herself if she'd ever been cooking for someone she wanted to impress. "Eat first," he said. "Tell me your name first." He set down the wooden spoon, turned to face her fully, leaned one hip against the counter, and crossed his arms, and in that position, with the firelight behind him and the rain outside, he looked like something carved, like a figure from a myth, the kind of story where the god walks among mortals, and the mortals are too stupid to notice. "Kaelin Voss," he said, "Alpha King of the Northern Territories." Her stomach dropped. Voss. Her birth pack. The territory she'd come from. The ruling family she'd heard about her entire childhood in the kind of hushed, reverent tones usually reserved for deities and natural disasters. The Voss Alpha King was a legend. The youngest Alpha King in 3 centuries, who had taken the throne at 22 after killing his predecessor in single combat, not his father. His uncle, a tyrant who had ruled the North for 3 decades with an iron fist and a policy of systematically eliminating any wolf he considered a threat to his power. Sable's father had been one of those wolves, killed when she was 4 years old. She remembered almost nothing about him, except the smell of wood shavings, because he had been a carpenter, had built furniture in a workshop behind their house. And the one memory she had of him was standing in that workshop watching curls of pale wood fall from a plane in his hands, while dust motes drifted through a shaft of sunlight. The Voss Alpha King had killed the man who had killed her father, and he was standing in front of her making scrambled eggs. "Eat," he said again, quieter this time. She ate. She hadn't meant to eat the way she did, fast and desperate, but her body overrode her pride. The eggs were perfect. The toast was perfect. The bacon was crisp at the edges and soft in the center, and she ate all of it and then sat staring at the empty plate with her hands shaking. "When was the last time you ate?" Kaelin asked. He wasn't looking at her. He was looking at the skillet. But his knuckles on the counter were white. "Yesterday, maybe the day before. The silver you drank, was it to kill the bond?" "Yes. Whose bond?" "Aldric Grey, Alpha of Greymoor. I know who Aldric Grey is." His voice hadn't changed volume, but the temperature in the room seemed to drop. One of the burners on the stove guttered, as if the gas line had hiccuped. "Did he mark you willingly?" "I was drugged. They put valerian in my food. I woke up with his mark already on me." Silence. The kind of silence that has weight, that presses down on the room like a hand on the back of your neck. She could feel the Alpha's fury, the way you could feel a thunderstorm building. A change in pressure. A thickening of the air, the fine hairs on her arms rising. "I need you to understand something," he said, and now he was looking at her, and his eyes were no longer gold. They were amber ringed with black, the wolf pushing forward, the iris nearly eclipsed. "What he did to you is a violation of the oldest law we have. A forced mark is grounds for execution under Northern Territory Code. I could kill him for this, and no council in the world would question it." "I don't need you to kill anyone for me. I'm not offering to do it for you. I'm telling you what I'm going to do. You don't know me. I know you're my mate." A mate bond I didn't ask for any more than I asked for his. The words landed like a slap. She watched them hit him. Watched him absorb them. And here was the thing that confused her. The thing that didn't match any template of Alpha behavior she'd ever witnessed. He didn't get angry. He didn't snarl, didn't posture, didn't close the distance between them and loom the way Aldric would have, the way every Alpha she'd ever known would have. He nodded. "You're right," he said. "You didn't ask for this." She hadn't expected that. She'd expected arguments, commands. The mate bond wielded like a weapon, the way it had been wielded against her before. She had not expected an Alpha King to stand in his own kitchen and simply agree with her. "The silver is still in your system," he continued, his tone shifting to something clinical, factual. The voice of a man changing the subject because the previous subject had cost him something he wasn't ready to show. "The charcoal will help, but you need a healer. I have one. She's discreet. She won't report your location to Greymore or anyone else." "Why would you help me?" "Because you're starving and poisoned and someone forced a mark on you while you were unconscious, and because I am the Alpha King, and these things happening in territories that border mine is a failure I take personally." A pause. "The mate bond is secondary to all of that." Liar, she thought. She could feel it through whatever fragile, half-formed connection was sparking between them, a pull so different from Aldrich's crude tether that it was like comparing a chain to a thread of light. Kaelin Voss was many things, but indifferent to the mate bond was not one of them. She could see it in the rigid set of his jaw, in the way he kept his hands occupied, stirring, wiping the counter, adjusting the burner, anything to keep from reaching for her. But he was choosing not to act on it. He was choosing to let her eat first. She didn't know what to do with that. The healer arrived within the hour. A small, sharp-featured woman named Isolde, who smelled like eucalyptus and iodine, and who examined Sable with brisk efficiency in the upstairs bedroom while Kaelin waited downstairs. Sable could hear him pacing. The floorboards creaked with the rhythm of it, back and forth, a caged pattern that mapped his agitation more honestly than anything he'd said. "The silver has degraded the forced mark significantly," Isolde said, pressing two cool fingers to the bond scar below Sable's ear. "Another day, maybe two, and it would have dissolved entirely. But the cost to your body would have been severe. Liver damage, neurological effects. You'd have killed the bond, but you might have lost the ability to walk." "Would the bond have been gone?" "Yes, then it would have been worth it." Isolde looked at her for a long moment, then said quietly, "The new bond, the one forming with him. You feel it?" Sable said nothing. "It's different from a forced mark," Isolde continued, wrapping Sable's torn palms in clean gauze that smelled like calendula. "A true mate bond can't be imposed. It can only be accepted. It's already there, in both of you. It was there before you were born, coded into the very architecture of your wolves. But it requires consent. Both sides. He can't mark you without your permission, and it hold. A forced mark on a true mate, it would burn him as much as you." "I don't have a wolf." Isolde's hands paused on the gauze. "Who told you that?" "The pack healer in Voss. When I was 12, I couldn't shift." "Hmm." Isolde tilted her head, a bird-like gesture, and her eyes, sharp and dark, swept over Sable with an intensity that felt like being read. "May I?" She pressed her palm flat against Sable's sternum, over her heart, and closed her eyes. 30 seconds passed. A minute. Sable could feel warmth radiating from the healer's hand. Not the surface warmth of skin, but something deeper, a probing heat that moved through her chest like a searchlight through fog. Isolde opened her eyes. "You have a wolf," she said. "I've never shifted." "No, you haven't." "Because someone locked it." The words didn't make sense. Sable stared at her. "What?" "There's a binding on your wolf. Old magic. Blood magic. The kind that was outlawed 200 years ago. Someone performed a suppression ritual on you when you were very young, possibly as an infant. Your wolf is there. She's been there your entire life. But she's sealed behind a wall that you can't feel and she can't breach." Isolde withdrew her hand. Whoever did this knew exactly what they were doing. And they were very, very afraid of what you would become if they didn't. The room was very quiet. The rain had stopped at some point, and the silence outside was the thick, padded silence of a mountain after a storm. The kind of silence that amplifies small sounds. A log settling in the fireplace, the tick of cooling pipes, Sable's own heartbeat in her ears. "Who would do that?" she whispered. "Someone who knew what you are." Isolde began packing her medical bag, her movements precise, unhurried. "I can't break the binding. It's beyond my skill. But the Alpha King has resources I don't, and I suspect, once he knows what I've found, he will move heaven and earth to undo it." "Why?" Isolde looked at her with something that might have been pity, might have been awe, and said, "Because the kind of wolf that requires blood magic to contain is not an Omega child. It's not even a regular Alpha. The last time a wolf like yours walked the earth was 300 years ago, and she founded the Voss dynasty." Then she left, and Sable sat on the edge of the bed in borrowed socks and a flannel shirt that smelled like cedar smoke, and she pressed her hand to her own chest and felt, for the first time, a faint answering pressure, like a palm pressing back from the other side of a wall. "Hello," she thought. "I didn't know you were there." Something warm pulsed through her. Not a word. Not an image. Just warmth. Kaelin was waiting at the bottom of the stairs. She could tell from the way he was standing, arms at his sides, shoulders deliberately lowered, that Isolde had already told him. His face was the carefully neutral mask of a man holding something enormous behind his teeth. "You heard?" Sable said. "I heard. I'm not going to be anyone's weapon. If you're thinking about what I could be useful for, don't." "I'm not thinking about what you're useful for."
"Then what are you thinking about?" He took a breath, let it out slowly.
"I'm thinking about the fact that someone cut you off from yourself before you could walk. I'm thinking about who would have had the knowledge and the motive. I'm thinking about the fact that my uncle controlled the Voss territory for 30 years, and that during those 30 years, 17 wolves with unusual bloodlines disappeared or died. Your father was one of them." She felt something cold move through her chest that had nothing to do with Silver.
"You think your uncle did this to me?"
"I think someone working for him did. He was afraid of any wolf who might challenge his hold on the territory. An alpha female with founder bloodline." He didn't finish the sentence. He didn't need to. "I'm not an alpha female. I'm a night cook who can't shift." "You're a night cook who can't shift because someone made sure of it." He stepped closer. Not close enough to touch, close enough for his scent to reach her. Cedar and black tea, and that high-altitude nothing that made the hollow place in her chest ache. "I have someone who can break the binding. She lives in the eastern reaches, 3 days' travel. She's the only practitioner of old blood magic left in the territories who isn't in prison. And you want me to go? I want you to choose. You can stay here, where you're safe. And I'll deal with Aldric Grey, and the Forced Mark will continue to degrade on its own. You can leave, if that's what you want. I'll give you money, clothes, identification, a phone, whatever you need. Or you can come east with me, and we break the binding, and you find out what you actually are. 3 choices. No commands." She kept waiting for the catch.
"What about the mate bond?" she asked.
"What about it?
Don't you want?"
"What I want is irrelevant to what you need." She studied him. The scar on his face. The white knuckles. The way his wolf pressed against the surface of his skin, visible in the faint glow of amber that ringed his irises, held in check by pure force of will. He wanted to close the distance between them. She could feel it in the bond. That fragile thread of light, the way it vibrated with his restraint. He was the most powerful wolf in 4 territories. He could have taken what he wanted. Every law of their world would have supported him. He was standing 6 feet away, asking for her permission.
I'll go east, she said. They travelled in a convoy of three vehicles along mountain roads that switchbacked through pine forests, so dense the daylight came through green-filtered, like being underwater. Sable rode in the back seat of Kaelin's SUV, with Declan driving and a female warrior named Kira in the passenger seat. Kaelin sat beside her in the back, which was ridiculous because the SUV was large, but he was larger, and the space between them was measured in inches and charged with the kind of electricity that makes your fingertips tingle. He didn't touch her. He kept his hands on his own knees, fingers spread, very still, and she watched the muscle in his jaw work every time the road curved and momentum shifted her weight toward him. They stopped at a way station the first night, a timber lodge built into the side of a hill, and Kaelin gave her her own room, with a lock on the inside, and she lay awake in the dark, listening to the sounds of a building full of wolves, the low voices, the laughter, the occasional howl from someone on patrol outside, and she pressed her hand to her chest and felt that warm pulse again, stronger now, as if her wolf was listening too. On the second day, Aldrich found them, not in person, through the bond. The forced mark on Sable's neck had been weakening steadily, the silver and the charcoal doing their work. But it was still there, still a thread connecting her to a man who had drugged her and bitten her in her sleep. And sometime around noon, Sable felt it jerk, hard, like someone yanking a leash. She gasped. Her hand flew to her neck. Kaelin reacted instantly. His hand closed over hers on her neck, not grabbing, covering, a gesture that was protective rather than possessive, and his gold eyes snapped to hers. He's pulling the bond, she managed through clenched teeth. Can he track you through it? I don't know. Maybe. He's never tried before, because I never ran before. Kaelin's expression didn't change, but his eyes went fully amber, the black of the pupil nearly swallowed, and he spoke in the tone of an alpha giving a direct order. Not to her, to the driver. Declan, double speed. Divert route through the gorge pass. Signal the rear vehicles to fan defensive. Then to her, in a completely different voice, low and steady, and meant only for her. I'm going to try something. It might feel strange. Will you allow it? What are you going to do? Push my energy into the space between your bond and his. Like interference. Static. It won't create a new bond. It will just make it harder for him to find you through the old one. She looked at him. His hand was still over hers on her neck. His palm was warm and slightly rough, calloused in the places where a man grips a weapon regularly, and his scent was everywhere, filling the enclosed space of the vehicle, and the fragile bond between them was humming like a plucked string. Do it, she said. The sensation was indescribable, like drinking something hot and cold at the same time, like menthol and honey. A spreading warmth that started where his palm met her skin and radiated outward, filling the channel where Aldrich's bond lived, flooding it with golden static that made the yanking pulung-hu, pulling sensation weaken and then stop entirely. For the first time in 6 months, the back of her mind was quiet. The radio static was gone. The standing water smell was gone. All she could feel was cedar and black tea, and the high, clear scent of mountain snow. Thank you, she whispered. He withdrew his hand slowly. Too slowly. His fingers trailed across her knuckles as he pulled away, and the touch left a line of heat on her skin that she could still feel 30 minutes later. On the third morning, they reached the eastern settlement and the woman who lived there. Her name was Esme, and she was not what Sable expected. She expected a crone, a witch in robes, someone theatrical and ancient. What she got was a woman who looked about 40, with brown skin and grey-streaked hair, pulled into a practical bun, wearing rubber boots and a quilted vest, who was feeding chickens in a fenced yard when they pulled up, and who looked at Kalin's convoy of armored vehicles with the expression of someone who has just been told their dentist appointment has been moved up. "You couldn't call ahead," Esme said. "I did call ahead. You called 12 hours ago. I have a life, Kalin." "You're feeding chickens."
"Exactly. A life." She looked past him at Sable, who was climbing out of the SUV on legs that were stiff from 3 days of travel and still unreliable from the silver damage. Esme's expression changed. The annoyance evaporated, and something focused and sharp took its place, the look of a professional assessing a situation.
"Bloodbinding," Esme said, not a question.
"You can see it?" Kalin asked.
"I can smell it. It's old. 20 years at least."
She approached Sable and stopped 3 feet away, studying her with eyes that were unsettlingly dark, the kind of dark where you can't distinguish pupil from iris.
"Who did this to you, girl?"
"I don't know. Someone in the former Alpha's circle," Kalin said. "My uncle's people."
"Gregor Voss."
Esme said the name like she was spitting out a seed.
"That man?
Even dead, his rot keeps spreading." She looked at Kalin.
"I can break it. But it won't be pleasant. The wolf has been locked away for over 20 years. When she comes out, she'll come out angry. Afraid. Feral, maybe. Whoever contains her during the emergence needs to be someone whose authority her wolf recognizes on an instinctive level."
"Me," Kalin said.
"You, her mate!"
Esme looked between them.
"You haven't bonded yet."
"No. That makes this harder. If you were bonded, your wolf could call hers. Calm her. Without the bond, you'll have to do it the old way. Dominance and trust. She has to choose to submit, and you have to be strong enough to hold her if she doesn't."
"I can hold her. You say that now. You haven't seen what comes out of 20 years of suppression. This isn't a normal wolf emerging. This is a wolf that has been screaming into silence since infancy. She will be rage. She will be grief. She will be every full moon she was denied. Every shift that never came. Every lonely night she spent feeling empty and broken because she thought she was incomplete." Esme's voice softened, just slightly, a crack in the professional veneer. "You need to be ready for that."
They did it that night. Esme prepared a clearing behind her house, laying down a circle of white mountain ash in the dirt and lighting torches at the 4 cardinal points. The flames threw shifting shadows across the trees, and the smoke smelled like pine resin and sage. Sable stood in the center of the circle in bare feet, the cold earth between her toes, wearing a simple cotton shift because Esme had told her the fabric wouldn't survive the shift, and anything with buttons or zippers would become a problem. Kalin stood at the edge of the circle. He had removed his coat, his Henley, his boots. He was bare from the waist up, and the firelight turned his scarred skin into a landscape, a terrain of violence and survival, and his eyes were fully gold, fully wolf, the man and the animal coexisting on the surface.
"When I start," Esme said, kneeling at the northern point of the circle with her hands flat on the ground, "you'll feel pressure, then heat, then pain. The binding will resist. It was designed to hold, not release. I'll be tearing it apart, thread by thread, and each thread will feel like something inside you breaking. It's not breaking. It's opening. Do you understand?"
Sable nodded. Her mouth was too dry to speak.
"Kalin, I'm here. When the wolf emerges, you step into the circle. Not before. If you step in while the binding is still active, it will interpret you as a threat and redirect its energy against you. Wait until I tell you."
"Understood."
Esme closed her eyes. her fingers pressed into the dirt. And the world changed. The torches flared, all four at once, the flames doubling in height and turning from orange to white. The mountain ash on the ground began to glow, a pale luminescence that looked like moonlight concentrated into a line. Sable felt the pressure first, just as Esme had warned, a sensation like being squeezed from the inside, like her rib cage was contracting. And then the heat came, radiating outward from her sternum, from the place where she'd felt that answering pressure, that warm palm on the other side of the wall. The wall was cracking, she could feel it. 20+ years of solid, impenetrable nothing, the absence she'd carried like a second skeleton, was fracturing, fissures spreading through it like ice breaking on a lake in spring. And behind the cracks, pressed against them, pushing, clawing, howling in a silence that was suddenly, violently no longer silent, was her wolf. The pain hit. It was not like any pain she'd experienced. Not the sharp, clean pain of a cut, or the dull ache of hunger, or the burning of silver. This was deeper, structural, like her bones were being rearranged from the inside. She dropped to her knees. She heard herself scream, but the sound seemed to come from very far away, from the bottom of a well. "Hold," Esme said. "Hold, it's coming." The wall shattered, and the wolf came out. Not a wolf. Not yet. First came the feeling, a tsunami of sensation that crashed through every cell of her body. 20 years of suppressed instinct and denied nature flooding in all at once. The smell of the forest amplified 1,000-fold. Every individual pine needle, every mushroom spore, the earthworms turning in the soil beneath her knees, the salt of Kaelin's sweat at the edge of the circle 30 feet away. Then came the sound, her own heartbeat thundering like hooves, the blood moving through her veins with a roar she'd never heard before, and underneath it all, rising like music, rising like a war cry, rising like dawn, her wolf's voice. It was not a whimper. It was a howl that shook the torches and cracked the mountain ash line and sent a flock of ravens exploding out of the tree canopy like a black detonation. "Now," Esme said, "Kaelin, now." He was already moving. He crossed the broken ash line in 2 strides and was beside her before the howl finished, and his arms went around her from behind, locking her against his chest. And he said her name, just her name, Sable, in a voice that vibrated through her spine, through the new animal awareness that was rewriting her nervous system. And his wolf, she could feel his wolf for the first time. Massive and ancient and radiating authority like heat from a forge, his wolf reached through the fragile bond and touched hers. Her wolf lunged, not at him, toward him. 20 years of isolation, and she lunged toward the first thing that felt like home, and the impact of the 2 wolves meeting through the bond was a physical concussion that knocked them both to the ground. Sable felt her body arch, felt her spine curve, felt something hot and liquid and enormous move under her skin. And she was shifting. She was actually shifting. The cotton shift tearing as her body changed, elongated, reformed, and the pain was exquisite, was searing, was the most alive she had ever felt. When it was over, she was a wolf, white, entirely white, from nose to tail tip, with eyes that were not gold and not blue and not green, but silver, pure molten silver, the same color as the poison she'd drunk to free herself, as if the metal had settled not in her liver, but in her wolf's eyes. She was also larger than she should have been, much larger, the size of Kaelin's wolf, which he could see now because he had shifted too, had let his wolf take over to meet hers, and he was black as char, black as the space between stars, standing across from her in the torchlight with amber eyes and a stillness that was pure alpha. They stood there, two wolves in a broken circle, white and black, silver eyes and gold. Her wolf wanted to run, wanted to tear through the forest and howl at the moon and feel the earth under paws she'd never had. But more than that, more than freedom, more than running, her wolf wanted to press her nose into the dark fur of the wolf in front of her and breathe him in. So she did. She stepped forward, pressed her muzzle into the thick fur of his neck, inhaled. Cedar and black tea and mountain snow, amplified through a wolf's senses into something so vivid it was almost a place, a landscape she could walk into and live in. He held perfectly still, let her scent him, let her decide. Then he lowered his massive head and pressed his forehead to hers, and the bond between them blazed like a struck match, and Sable thought, this is what they meant. This is what the word meant, mate. Not a chain, not a collar, not a contract signed in someone else's blood. But this quiet pressing together, this choice. They shifted back at dawn. Sable found herself on the cold ground of the clearing, naked, every muscle trembling, covered in a fine layer of sweat and dirt, with Kaelin's coat already being draped over her shoulders before she was fully conscious of being human again. He was crouched beside her, still shirtless, still warm, and he was looking at her with an expression she'd never seen on any Alpha's face. Reverence. Absolute, unconcealed reverence. Don't look at me like that, she said. Her voice was hoarse from the howling. Like what? Like I'm something sacred. You were white. His voice was rough. A white wolf. Do you know what that means? I know the legends. They're not legends. The last white wolf was Sarah Voss, the founder. 300 years ago, she united the northern packs and established the code that forbids forced bonding. The code that was violated when Aldrich Gray marked you. So I'm what, a reincarnation? You're proof that the bloodline isn't dead, that the old power still exists. He paused. And you're my mate, and I still haven't touched you without permission, and it is becoming genuinely, physically difficult. She almost laughed. Almost. The absurdity of it. The most powerful alpha in the territories kneeling in the dirt in front of her, admitting that restraint was costing him, while she sat wrapped in his coat with twigs in her hair and dirt on her face and a wolf inside her that was purring. Actually, purring, like a massive cat. Aldrich will come, she said, because someone had to say it. Yes, he'll bring Greymore. He'll try. People will get hurt. People have already been hurt. You've been hurt. For 20 years. He stood, extended a hand to her. Come inside. We need to plan. She took his hand. His fingers closed around hers, and the contact sent a pulse through the bond that made them both go still for a moment, standing in the gray dawn light, hand in hand, breathing. Thank you, she said, for not commanding me. You can't command a white wolf. Even an alpha king knows that. But you wanted to. His jaw tightened. Every minute of every day since I smelled you in that parking lot. That's honest. You deserve honesty. You've had enough lies. They went inside. Esme made coffee that was too strong and served it in ceramic mugs that were chipped and mismatched and stained with years of use. Declan and Kira arrived from the perimeter patrol with news that scout vehicles had been spotted on the eastern road, Greymore vehicles, black with gray insignia, moving in a pattern that suggested they were searching, not traveling. He's tracking the dead bond, Kaelin said, studying a map spread across Esme's kitchen table, which was cluttered with herb jars and chicken feed and a stack of old botanical prints. The silver degraded it, but the scar tissue still has his signature. He can follow it like a broken signal. How long until he pinpoints us? Declan asked. 12 hours. Maybe less if he has a tracker with him. Sable stood at the window. Outside, the chickens were going about their morning, scratching in the dirt, oblivious to the war council happening 10 feet away. She could hear their heartbeats now. That was new. She could hear the blood moving in the veins of the worms they were eating. She could smell the mineral composition of the soil, her wolf pressed against the inside of her skin, not trying to emerge, just present. A warm, solid weight that she'd spent 22 years missing without knowing what she was missing. I'll go to him, she said. Every head in the room turned. No, Kaelin said. The word was flat, absolute. The first time she'd heard him use his alpha authority on her. His eyes flashed amber. If I go to him, he stops searching. He stops bringing wolves closer to people who have nothing to do with this. She turned from the window. Esme has nothing to do with this. Her chickens have nothing to do with this. You are not going back to the man who drugged and marked you. I didn't say I was going back to him. I said I'd go to him. There's a difference. The room was quiet. Declan and Kira exchanged a glance. Esme, sitting in the corner with her coffee, watched Sable with those dark, unreadable eyes. What exactly are you suggesting? Kaelin asked, his voice strained in a way that told her his wolf was very close to the surface. I'm suggesting that I am a white wolf with founder bloodline, and I have been hiding my entire life, and I am done hiding. I'm suggesting that Aldrich Gray marked me without my consent, and that under Northern Territory Code, I have the right to challenge that mark in single combat. Not you. Me. You've had your wolf for 6 hours. My wolf has been waiting for 22 years. She's ready. Sable, I am not yours to protect, Kaelin. Not yet. I haven't accepted the bond. I haven't let you mark me. I am standing here as an unattached wolf with a legitimate grievance and the legal right to address it. Wouldn't you want the same? He stared at her. She could feel the war inside him through the bond. The alpha instinct to shelter and guard and keep safe clashing with something deeper. Something that respected the steel in her spine, that recognized her as an equal and not a possession. If he hurts you, he said. If he lays one hand on you, my wolf will not stay leashed. Bond or no bond, I need you to know that. I know. And after, when this is done. He crossed to her, stood close enough that she had to tilt her head back to look at him. This close, she could see the individual striations in his golden irises, the faint scars at the corners of his eyes from squinting into sun and wind. After this, I'm going to ask you a question, and I need you to know that whatever your answer is, I will honor it. What question? You'll know when I ask it. Aldrich Gray arrived at noon. He came with 40 wolves, which was most of Greymoor's fighting force, arranged in a semicircle at the tree line beyond Esme's property. He stood at the center of them, and Sable, looking at him from 100 yards away, was struck by how ordinary he was. Not the monster her memory had built. Just a man. Average height, sandy hair going thin at the crown, a face that was unremarkable except for the cruelty around the mouth, a tightness in the lips that came from years of practicing contempt. He smelled like wet dog and gin, even from here, even through the wind. Sable. His voice carried the familiar command tone, the one that had made her flinch for 6 months. You've been very difficult. Come home. She stepped out of Esme's front door and walked toward him across the open ground. Behind her, she could feel Kaelin, could feel his wolf straining against the leash of his will like a war dog hearing the trumpet. She didn't look back. She stopped 20 feet from Aldrich. "You marked me without my consent," she said. Her voice was steady. Her wolf was steady inside her, coiled and waiting, silver eyes watching through Sable's own. "You were a gift from your pack leader. Gifts don't require consent. Under Northern Territory Code, a forced mark is grounds for challenge. I'm invoking that right." Aldrich laughed. It was a genuine laugh, the laugh of a man who has just been told something truly ridiculous. "You, challenge me. You're a wolfless Omega who couldn't shift on her best day." Things change. She shifted. It was faster this time. Faster and less painful. The transformation flowing through her like water, like a river breaking through a dam. And she stood before him in her wolf form, white as winter, silver-eyed, and nearly as large as an alpha male. Aldrich's laugh died. Behind him, his wolves began to shift their weight, shuffle, whine. Wolves recognize power on an instinctual level, the same way prey recognizes a predator. They were looking at Sable's wolf, and their bodies were telling them what their alpha's pride wouldn't let him admit. She was bigger than him, stronger than him, and older than him, not in years, but in lineage, in the blood that ran 300 years deep to the founder of the dynasty. "That's impossible," Aldrich said. His voice had lost its command tone. It sounded thin, reedy, the voice of a man standing in front of something he doesn't understand. And then, for 1 second, something passed across his face that Sable hadn't expected. Not fear. Something worse. Grief. A flash of it, quick as a blink, the expression of a man who suddenly understands that everything he's built, his pack, his territory, his control, was constructed on a foundation of cruelty that is now cracking under the weight of something real. He looked at her wolf, and for 1 second, he looked tired. Bone-deep tired. The way a man looks when he's been running from something for so long that he's forgotten he's running. Then it was gone. Replaced by rage, and he shifted. His wolf was grey-brown, stocky, powerful in the way of wolves who fight dirty, who go for tendons and eyes. He lunged at her with his jaws wide, and she sidestepped, a movement that was pure instinct, her wolf moving her body with a grace she'd never possessed as a human, and she caught his shoulder in her teeth and threw him, not bit. Threw. He went airborne, 200 pounds of wolf cartwheeling through the air and hitting the ground hard enough to leave a trench in the dirt. He scrambled up, circled, lunged again. She met him this time, head on, their bodies colliding with a sound like 2 slabs of meat hitting a counter, and the impact drove her back 3 feet. But she held. She held. And her jaws found his throat. She didn't bite down. She held him. Pinned. Her teeth on his jugular, the pulse of his blood against her tongue, his wolf going limp beneath her in the involuntary submission response that no wolf, no matter how proud, can override. She held him and waited. Behind her, she heard Kaelin's voice, commanding but controlled. "Stand down, Greymore. Your alpha has yielded. Any wolf who moves forfeits their life." The 40 Greymore wolves stood frozen. Sable opened her jaws, stepped back, let Aldrich lie in the dirt, panting, his throat unmarked. She could have killed him. Every wolf present knew she could have killed him. The fact that she didn't was a statement more powerful than any execution. She shifted back, stood naked in the clearing, dirt on her knees, blood on her lips from a cut she'd taken on his shoulder plate, and she said in a voice that carried across the silence, "The forced mark is broken. You have no claim on me. You never did." Aldrich shifted back slowly. He lay on the ground for a long moment, staring at the sky. When he spoke, his voice was stripped of everything. Command, cruelty, pretense. Just a man's voice, hoarse and defeated. I knew what you were, he said, when they brought you to me. I could feel it, something sealed inside you, something enormous. I thought if I marked you, I could contain it, use it. A pause. I was wrong. Yes, Sable said, you were. Kaelin's coat settled over her shoulders. He'd crossed the distance without her hearing, which should have been impossible given his size, and his hands were gentle as he pulled the fabric around her, careful not to touch her skin without invitation. Even now, even with his wolf screaming at him to claim and protect and never let go. What happens to him? She asked quietly, for Kaelin's ears only. Under the code, a forced mark that is proven and challenged results in exile. Permanent. His pack will be absorbed into the nearest territory. Not death, not unless you want it. She looked at Aldric Grey, lying in the dirt, stripped of everything. She thought about the months of drugged porridge and locked doors and the feeling of his bond in her head, like a radio tuned to static. She thought about the night she'd ground silver into tea and drunk it, knowing it might kill her because death seemed preferable to one more day of belonging to someone against her will. Exile, she said. Let him live with the emptiness. Kaelin nodded. Then he turned to face the Greymoor wolves, all 40 of them, and his voice when he spoke was the voice of a king. Greymoor Pack. Your alpha has been defeated in lawful challenge. His forced bond has been dissolved. Under Northern Territory Code, I offer you two choices. Swear fealty to the Vos Territory and be absorbed under my protection, or disperse. Any wolf who chooses to follow Aldric Grey into exile forfeits the protection of the Code. Decide now. One by one, 37 of the 40 wolves lowered their heads. 3 turned and followed Aldric as he limped toward the tree line. And Sable watched him go and felt nothing. No pull, no tether, no static. Just silence. Clean, empty, silver-tasting silence. They stayed at Esme's that night. There was nowhere else to go. The journey back to the Vos territory would take 3 days, and Sable's body was running on reserves that had been depleted days ago. Esme made a stew from things in her garden, potatoes and leeks and carrots, and served it with bread so fresh it steamed when you tore it, and Sable ate 2 bowls and then a third, and no one commented on it. After dinner, she sat on the porch steps in the dark, wrapped in Kaelin's coat, which she had not returned, and which he had not asked for. The stars were out. More stars than she'd ever seen. The Milky Way visible as a thick smear of light from horizon to horizon, and the air smelled like pine sap cooling, and the last warmth of the day releasing from the stones. Kaelin sat beside her, close but not touching. The bond between them was bright now, a steady hum that she could feel in her teeth, in her bones, in the pads of her fingertips. Her wolf pressed toward him with the gentle, relentless pressure of water, seeking its level. You said you had a question, she said. I do. Ask it. He was quiet for a moment. She could hear his heartbeat, steady, strong, a little faster than his usual measured rhythm. The Alpha King was nervous. The realization was so unexpected, it almost made her smile. I want to mark you, he said. Not because of what you are. Not because of the White Wolf or the Founder bloodline or the political alliance it would represent. I want to mark you because when I saw you in that parking lot, bleeding and poisoned and furious, my wolf said one word, and it was the first time in my entire life that he and I agreed on anything without argument. What if I say no? Then I'll sit on this porch every night until you change your mind or tell me to leave. And I'll keep cooking for you, because you're still underweight, and it bothers me more than any military threat I've ever faced. That's not rational. No, you're the Alpha King. You're supposed to be rational. I am rational about everything else. I am completely irrational about you. I have made my peace with it. She looked at him, at the scar on his face, silver white in the starlight, at his hands, resting on his knees, the same hands that had cooked her eggs and wrapped his coat around her shoulders, and held her during the most violent transformation a wolf could undergo. Always careful, always waiting for permission, always leaving space for her to choose. She leaned toward him, closed the distance that he had maintained for 3 days, the inches that had cost him more than any battle. She pressed her lips to his. He tasted like cedar and black tea, and underneath that, on his tongue, the faintest trace of silver. He pulled back, barely, his forehead against hers, his breath unsteady for the first time since she'd known him. "You taste like silver," he said. "I drank it to kill a bond." "I know." His hand came up to her jaw, his thumb tracing the line of it, and his eyes were gold, fully gold, and very close. "Silver kills wolf bonds, but it didn't kill ours." "No." "Do you know why?" "Because ours isn't a bond," she said. "It's a choice." He kissed her again. Longer this time. Deeper. And the taste of silver was there between them. Metallic and sharp. The ghost of everything she'd been willing to destroy to be free. And he didn't flinch from it. Didn't pull away. Drank it in as if it were part of her. As if the poison she'd swallowed to save herself was just another facet of the woman he'd chosen. When he pulled back the second time, his eyes were wet. The Alpha King was crying, not sobbing, not breaking down. Just 2 tears, one from each eye, tracking down his scarred face in the starlight, and he didn't wipe them away, didn't hide them, just let them fall. "I swear," he said, and his voice was raw, stripped to the grain, "that no bond will ever be forced on you again. Not by any Alpha. Not by any pack. Not by Binkle. What we have, we build. What you give freely. And if you ever want to leave, the door is not locked. It will never be locked." She took his face in her hands, felt the scar tissue under her right palm, smooth and raised, felt the tears under her thumbs. "Mark me," she said. He lowered his mouth to her neck, not to the left side, where Aldrich's scar was still fading, to the right, to clean skin that had never been claimed, and the bite, when it came, was sharp and bright and nothing like the first time, nothing like absence and violation and waking up with someone else's signature in your blood. This was presence. This was the moment of a key turning and a door opening, and something clicking into place that had been misaligned for 22 years. Her wolf howled inside her. His wolf answered, the bond locked in. Not a chain. Not a hook. A bridge. A frequency. A shared language written in cedar smoke and silver. She marked him back. She pressed her teeth to the junction of his neck and shoulder and bit down, and his whole body shuddered, and the sound he made was not the growl of an Alpha asserting dominance, but the exhale of a man finally setting down something heavy he'd been carrying alone for a very long time. They sat on the porch steps under the stars, marked, bonded, bleeding slightly, his arm around her shoulders and her head against his chest. She could hear 2 heartbeats now, his and hers. synchronized. The same rhythm. You're going to have to stop cooking for me, she said. Why? Because I'm a better cook than you, he laughed. A real laugh startled out of him, and the sound of it, rich and warm and completely unguarded, was the most human thing she'd ever heard from a wolf. 3 weeks later, the formal ceremony took place at the Voss Pack Seat, a sprawling timber compound set into the mountainside like a crown on a king's head. Every alpha from the Northern Territories attended. So did representatives from the East, the South, the Western Seaboard Packs. They came because it was politically significant. They came because the White Wolf was real and the founder bloodline lived. They came because the Alpha King had found his mate. But mostly they came because the story had traveled, as stories do in wolf territories, passed from wolf to wolf in a chain of tellings that grew and shifted, but always kept the essential core. A night cook with no wolf, silver in tea, a parking lot in the rain, a door that was never locked. Sable stood in front of 300 wolves in a dress that was simple and white, not because of symbolism, but because Esme had sewn it from fabric she had on hand, cotton with small imperfections in the weave that you could only see up close. And Sable liked the imperfections, liked the honesty of them. Kaelin stood beside her in black, as always, and his hand found hers and their fingers interlocked, and the bond between them hummed at a frequency that every wolf in the room could feel, a resonance that vibrated in the bones and said, without words, this is real, this is chosen, this is ours. The ceremony was brief. Wolf ceremonies always are. The words are old, and the meaning is simple, and the important part isn't what's said, but what's felt. After there was food, an obscene amount of food, because Sable had insisted on overseeing the kitchen, and the Voss Pack cooks had watched in stunned silence as their new Luna demonstrated a skill level that had been honed over years of solitary night shifts in kitchens where no one was watching, and the only standard was her own. The venison stew was the same recipe she'd made at Greymore, scraps and bone broth, but here, in this kitchen with good ingredients and working burners and a window that closed all the way, it was transformed into something that made hardened warriors go quiet and reach for second bowls. Late that night, after the guests had retired and the fires had burned low, Sable stood at the window of the Alpha Suite, which was now her room too, her home too, looking out at the mountain landscape silvered by moonlight. Behind her, Kaelin was already in bed, watching her with those gold eyes, patient as always, always patient. She pressed her hand to the glass. It was cold under her palm. On the other side of the window, snow was beginning to fall. The first snow of the season. Soft, silent. The kind of snow that accumulates slowly, covering everything, making the world new. She could feel her wolf, warm and awake and content, curled like a flame in the space that had been empty for 22 years. She could feel his wolf, massive and steady, and anchored to hers by something stronger than blood magic, stronger than silver, stronger than any force that had ever tried to break her. She turned from the window, crossed to the bed, lay down beside him, and he pulled her close, and his nose found the mark on her neck. His mark. And he pressed his lips to it, and she felt the kiss all the way to the center of her chest, all the way to the place where her wolf lived. I can still taste it, he murmured against her skin. The silver. Right here. He kissed the mark again. Right where you fought your way free. She closed her eyes. His heartbeat was steady against her back. The snow was falling outside. The door was unlocked. She slept without dreaming, and in the morning the mountains were white,